Is this Simona?
This is Simona. Hi.
Hello. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, too.
The new CD reminds me that while what made you famous was the Goldberg Variations, you are by no means and never have been a Bach specialist. You do many different kinds of music, and this new one, Broadway Lafayette, takes you to some very different repertory. Maybe you could tell us about this concept, Broadway and Lafayette.
Yes. Well, the concept comes from the idea about the connection between France and America, which is a historic connection in terms of how the two countries have influenced each other. And the idea originated for me with a new concerto that I had commissioned from the composer Philip Lasser. And he wrote this beautiful concerto for me called The Circle and the Child. And Philip is half French and half American. And I thought it would be very interesting to program that concerto with a French concerto and an American concerto. And to me, it made a lot of sense to do Ravel's Piano Concerto in G and the Rhapsody in Blue. I think that those two concertos have a lot of interesting connections with each other. And having Philip's concerto in the middle was an interesting programming idea.
On many CDs, one hears a couple of familiar pieces and then a new piece. And that's usually the one for me, I will blushingly admit, that I'm least likely to listen to again. But in this case, the Philip Lasser piece is absolutely beautiful. I will be programming and listening to that often. That's a piece that I think many listeners will love.
I'm so glad to hear that. I feel that way about it too. And it's, I do think it's rare to have a new piece of music that really speaks to the listener in that kind of profound way.
This is a piece that was actually written for you, which brings up a couple of questions. Does it in some way reflect your way of playing the piano?
Very much so. I think that, to start with, Philip and I are very close friends, and I've played a lot of his music, and he's extremely familiar with my playing and my musical sensibility and just who I am as a person. And this piece was so much written for me in the sense that the values of the writing, the pianism in it, the kind of sound, the lyricism, the touch, it's all me. And I think it's also very much him, obviously, but maybe one of the reasons why we're drawn to each other musically is that we do share those values.
Also, it takes as its inspiration a Bach chorale, and that seems to be a connection to you, too, or not?
Yes, and also another reason why we're such good friends is that we both love Bach so much. And Philip has done quite a lot of compositions that are based on Bach in some way or another. And so he chose this chorale, which he felt had really unusual elements to it. And the whole concerto is based on it, not just in terms of the the melody of the chorale, but interesting elements within the harmonization of it that he uses throughout the piece.
It's funny, I think of myself as a sort of Bach devotee, but I'd never heard of this chorale before.
It's not part of a cantata. It's rarely played.
Very beautiful piece. Yeah. And so this composition has the title The Circle and the Child. It's not just a concerto, but there's a programmatic element of it. How does that influence the way you play it and the way you think about it?
Well, Philip is also a poet, and so I think he does think about words in that way, in that it's not, I wouldn't call it exactly a programmatic piece of music, but I think that there is a feeling in the piece that has to do with the circularity of life and of form. And I think the child is part of that, the innocence leading to experience, leading back again to innocence, this cycle. I think of it almost in relationship to T.S. Eliot some of the four quartets deal with this idea of the circularity of innocence and experience. And that's present in the music, in that I think the music has a certain kind of optimism to it, which relates to the innocence, but also has, there are fears within it, and there's dissonance, and there are confrontations in the music that are like what happens in life. And yet the whole piece begins and ends with this C major, this writing within the white keys, which is very kind of pure.
And for a listener, one of the great things is that you can actually hear this going on. It's not some sort of hidden, impenetrable structure at all. It's very, very listenable and very, very audible.
Yeah, I think that that's what's so wonderful about it. And I've now performed the piece several times. And every time I play it, I find more in it. And I think that's a real mark of a great piece of music, is that the more you listen to it or the more you play it, the more layers there are. And yet it reaches you from the beginning. It strikes a chord. And I think that it's music that many people from different backgrounds could listen to and it would speak to them.
When you play Bach, there's not a lot of information in the scores about loud and soft and fast and slow. But when you're playing the music of Philip Lasser, you can ask exactly how he wants the notes to be played, quite different from our relationship to Bach. I wonder to what degree you would go to Philip Lasser with requests for how he wants something played, and to what degree he comes to you to say, how would this come across best? To which degree does it go two ways?
That's a really interesting question. I think, we have an interesting relationship. I wouldn't say that Philip has ever asked me, how do you think it should be here, or what would be better here? He has shared with me, one of the most special things about this concerto was that he shared the process of composing it with me. It took a couple of years, and he would bring it over and play for me what he had written as it was going on. And that was really amazing and exciting to witness. And I think the only time when he asked my advice was after the first few performances of it, in terms of the orchestration, because there were certain elements, there were certain problems with balance. And so we did talk a lot about that and what he could have thinned out, and he wound up reorchestrating certain parts of the piece. But in terms of me going to him, I did call him up in the beginning and ask him about this and that and what did he mean here or there. But one of the most fascinating things about it is that he does have a tendency to write in the score certain poetic descriptions. At certain points, he'd write something about what he felt was taking place. And I've found this in all of the music that I've played of his, that his words, he has a different feeling about words than I do. And so the words didn't make sense to me. And it would make me play it in an unnatural way. And so I actually crossed out all of his words and just played it how I thought the music was meant to be played. And then he loved how I played it. But when I tried to play it according to the words, it didn't come off right. And we've joked about that, you know, he has to cross out the words for me. But I think that maybe for other performers in the future, those words will be important just as a kind of key. But my relationship with his music seems to be nonverbal.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
how the back and forth and how the instructions on the page, which is all we get from composers from the past, could actually be misleading. And for a specific performer, they might be the worst thing to put in.
I think that it's something that I think about quite a bit, that oftentimes we are such fundamentalists about the score. I mean, it really reminds me of the connection between being any kind of a fundamentalist, a religious fundamentalist, whoever takes somebody who takes a written work literally. And I do think that many musicians are fundamentalists when it comes to the score. And personally, I feel that everything that's written in a score is really a very rough guide to what is meant, that it's actually quite hard for a composer to write down exactly what they intended. And there's also a real element to writing, to musical writing, which is about the relationship between the composer who writes it and then the musician who brings that music to life. And the musician, the instrumentalist, or the whoever it is that's interpreting the music, might actually find something there that the composer never intended, but it's there nonetheless in the music.
That is so profound. And that relates also to your playing of other composers. And I wanted to ask you about the other two works on the CD, because I don't want to give them short shrift. The CD is called Broadway Lafayette, which is, for me, that's a stop in the New York subway. And,
yeah.
And I think that's what's on the front cover photo. Am I right?
Yes.
So it's Gershwin and Ravel, and these performances are quite special. I noticed, for example, in the last movement of the Ravel, your performance has this kind of wonderful wildness, kind of almost madcap energy. And I thought, this is like listening to a live concert performance. And yet it was actually recorded in the studio, I think. As you perform in studio and live, do you feel there's a difference? And did you try to capture that in this performance?
There is a big difference between the studio and performing, but there is less of a difference between performing and recording with an orchestra.
I see. Okay.
Because there are time constraints, because of budget constraints. And so this was my first recording with a symphony orchestra. And the way it works is that you walk in and And right from the beginning, you're recording. There's no rehearsing. Like, the rehearsal's recorded. Everything's recorded. And so you only have maybe two or three opportunities to play something. And so it has that kind of manic quality that you can get in a performance because of that.
I see. Ah.
Yeah.
So unlike when you recorded the Goldberg Variations, which you did presumably at your own pace in the studio, this is it. You walk in. You got a couple of chances. That's it. Like a performance.
A little bit like it, yes.
I loved what resulted. It's inspiring.
Thank you. What was it
like for you to be in this situation?
Well, it was very exciting, and I loved working with Christian Jarvi, the conductor, who I've worked with before in concerts, and that was great. It was intense. I mean, I really felt like under the gun, and it's a tremendously focused process doing a recording. It's the most focused I ever am in my life is during recording sessions. And I think that those days with the orchestra were particularly focused. And then, of course, the other thing is that you have to be very careful because, you know, one of the orchestral members might have a bad take. You know, you never know who might have a bad take. So you have to be as good as possible in every single take because they might have to use a take that you didn't think you played as well in because the clarinet sounds better in that one, you know. So it's quite a lot of pressure and I really, really practiced for it. And it was a real learning experience. I think that my playing really grew during those days.
One other question. You talk about the French and American connection, but the other connection for me is New York and jazz. Now, you live in Brooklyn. Your dad, Simon Dinnerstein, is a famous artist. Your mom, an educator at the school in Brooklyn where your son now attends and your husband teaches. You have this real connection to the city. As I listen to certainly the Ravel and Gershwin, I feel something of the energy of New York there. Is this something that you feel in it? Is this an element of, is this something that's there? Or is this just my imagination here in Iowa?
No, I think that there is the energy of New York in it. I think that New York is a very syncopated place. I mean, you have all the different sounds of, and that all comes through in his music. And actually, there's also the sound of trains in the Rhapsody in Blue. But I think that that energy and the freshness. I wanted the recording to be very clean. Yeah, I wanted it to be clear. Like I wanted all of the relationships between the orchestra to be really live. And I think that we got that in this recording. And that was done with a bunch of East German players. So there you go.
And I guess one other circle here is that, okay, we have the French and New York connection with Ravel and Gershwin. And it really does really just, it just crackles. It's just alive. It's wonderful. And the Lesser piece, which is inspired by Bach, and you recorded it in Leipzig, the town where Bach spent his last part of his career.
Yes, it was quite an interesting place to record it in with the radio symphony, the MDR. At first I thought, well, I wonder how this is going to work. Like, what is the connection here? And then of course I thought, oh, well, of course, because of the Bach chorale in Philip's concerto, it did draw a whole circle between those pieces and Bach and my relationship with all of the music. So it was really exciting.
And you recorded with Christian Järvi before in other works that were inspired by Bach. He did a lot of work in New York City. Is that where the Absolute Ensemble is located? Am I right about that? Or?
Yes, the Absolute Ensemble is based in New York City, and I did a Bach project with them based on the Bach Inventions, and we did record that. I have had quite a relationship with Christian.
Whenever
just to interject, they're telling me that we're almost out of time, you know.
Sorry. Well, Simona Dinnerstein, it has been a delight to talk to you, and I love your new CD, and I hope we will see you back in Iowa sometime.
Thank you. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yes, me too.
Okay.
Thank you so much,
right.
Simona Dinnerstein.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.